This message comes from On Point sponsor Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield approval. If you qualify and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
24 years in the Weather Service, let me tell you, this one really scares me. It's one of the situations you're going to get heavy rain, catastrophic life-threatening storm surge, rain, and also the winds.
That's how Ken Graham, director of the National Hurricane Center, is describing Hurricane Florence. This morning, President Trump said government officials are ready.
We're fully prepared, food, medical, everything you can imagine. We are ready.
The Category 4 hurricane is slowly churning toward the Carolinas. More than 1.5 million people have been told to evacuate. Millions more will be affected by flooding, storm surges, and potential power outages that could last weeks. That means being prepared to ride out the consequences over a couple of days, if not longer. Climate change threatens to make extreme weather events like this even more disastrous and frequent. I mean, Harvey, Irma, Maria, and now Florence are forcing a reevaluation of what preparedness really means. So this hour On Point, radically rethinking resiliency. You can join us on air or online. Are you in the path of Hurricane Florence? How are you preparing? And are you ready for a recovery period that could last weeks or months? Do we all have to rethink how we live and how we prepare for major weather disasters? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining me first today from Atlanta is Greg Postel. He's the hurricane and storm specialist for the Weather Channel and co-host of the Weather Channel's American Morning Headquarters Weekend. Greg, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. How are you?
I'm doing well, but thinking, of course, about all those millions of people who are going to be facing Florence here. What's the latest we know about when the storm is expected to make landfall?
Well, making landfall and when you start to see the impacts are actually different things. Okay. I mean, this is going to probably make landfall during the day on Friday. Somewhere in the Carolinas, we're not exactly sure when, and it could even be South Carolina. Some of the guidance has shifted farther south, bringing in areas that weren't initially thought to be in play on the table for significant impacts. But as I mentioned, the impacts are going to be starting probably tomorrow during the day on Thursday, early in the day, on the coasts of both North and South Carolina, with it a medium to large size storm. The impacts, the waves, some of the outer rain bands, and some increasing wind will be felt, 12 hours prior to any landfall.
Okay, so we heard at the top of the show here, the Ken Graham from the National Hurricane Center saying this one really scares me. 24 years in the Weather Service, he's never seen anything like it. I mean, he should know what he's talking about. Would you agree?
He knows exactly what he's talking about, and I'm right on board with him in that sense. I mean, this sort of combines some of the wind that, if you remember, Hurricane Hugo from the late 1980s had. I mean, it's comparably strong. Exactly what this will be when it closes in on land, we don't know for sure, but it's got some of that in it. It also has some of the reminders of Harvey. Now, that's not to say it's going to be equally bad in that sense, but the fact that it comes in, slows down, and delivers a ton of rain, which might be ended up measuring in feet, this is one of those storms that's got all the hazards. And of course, storm surge and life-threatening inundation right along the coast and even inland, because there are lots of low-lying areas that are going to be seeing the effect of the surge come inland, which could exceed 10 feet in some places above normally dry ground. This has all the hazards, and it's also going to be lasting for days to come.
Lasting for days. Okay, now, if I heard you correctly, you just said storm surge potentially at 10 feet in places?
Yeah, the maximum storm surge we think could be higher than 10 feet. Exactly where that ends up being is going to determine where the center crosses land, and there's still some things to sort out with that. It may well be in southern North Carolina or near the border with South Carolina in that zone, just to the right of where the center comes onshore, where the strongest east to northeast wind occurs. That's when you can get inundation levels above normally dry ground up to 10 feet. Very significant and devastating storm surge.
Okay, and what about rain? I mean, 20, 30, 40 inches?
That's indeed on the table. That's certainly a possibility. Again, in cross parts of the interior sections, even where, the storm begins to slow down a little bit once it moves inland, that's absolutely possible that we could see 2-3 feet plus of rain. And it is pretty remarkable the kind of flooding that could inflict. Because when you think about it, I mean, the flooding in the interior sections moving into those watershed areas, and the water's going to try to flow out toward the ocean. But at the same time, there's going to be the storm surge coming in the opposite direction from the ocean inland up the tributaries and streams and rivers. So there's going to be a massive flooding potential when those two sort of flow streams meet up.
Okay, one more thing, Greg. I mean, what sort of area are we looking at of people being affected here? We're focusing on the Carolinas rightly right now, but other states?
Potentially Georgia, for example. There's a scenario that's not unrealistic that brings Florence very close to the North-South Carolina border, say early Friday morning, and then it kind of parallels the coast going southwestward for about a day, bringing it on shore somewhere in South Carolina, and then continuing to move it west, the remnants of it, into Georgia with some wind and a lot of rain, right? So Georgia, central and north Georgia, not out of the woods.
Wow. Okay, so Greg Postel, hurricane and storm specialist for the Weather Channel. Greg, stand by here for just a second because I want to go right now to South Carolina. Abigail Darlington joins us from Charleston. She covers the city of Charleston for the South Carolina Post and Courier. We've got a link to some of her reporting, including a story she wrote saying Charleston area should prepare for at least some flooding from Hurricane Florence. That link is at onpointradio.org. Abigail, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for having me.
So what are you seeing so far about how Charleston is preparing for Florence?
Well, things have definitely changed in the past 12 hours with the updated forecast. You know, I think this was kind of a little bit business as usual yesterday. You know, there was sandbag stations, people were filling up. You know, there were a lot of lines at grocery stores, at gas stations, Costco, et cetera, you know, the kinds of places that you would think. But, it's not a ghost town right now. But I think that we might start to see that change a little bit with the new forecast, just so much uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
I think people who thought that, well, this might not hit us, you know, I can probably ride this out, might be thinking otherwise at this point, because it does look like there's a potential to see Florence kind of come down the coast.
Wow.
and that's really alarming.
What are officials most worried about? Is it flooding or just sort of the potential we were hearing that, you know, if enough trees go down, we could have power outages for a long, long time? I mean, where's sort of the focus of their concern?
It's a good question. I think, from what I'm hearing, you know, for a while, at least yesterday and into last night, it was sort of the sense that the surge, which is the most dangerous aspect, would not be so bad because we're on the south end of the storm. But now with it maybe hovering over the coastline and kind of sinking down, maybe that is more of a concern and that flooding would be more severe. Of course, you know, the wind probabilities have picked up too, so that's definitely a concern. What's interesting about the wind is I've learned that it's probably going to come from the kind of the north northwest, which is a little bit different. Usually it comes in kind of just from the rivers, and that's also a concern. You know, if people have, you know, older trees, which a lot of people do, where we have, you know, very protected kind of old oak trees here. And so I definitely think all of these different confluence of forces is a huge concern, especially with all of the rain that could come.
Yeah.
We had a pretty big flood earlier this summer that was up to 8 inches of rain, and that flooded out the city almost completely. I mean, you couldn't get down into the medical district. You couldn't cross bridges. I mean, and that was just from a rainfall event.
Yeah.
So you factor in surge and rain, and it's a really anxious time here in Charleston.
Anxious is a very good way of putting it, Abigail. I want to play a little bit of tape here. This is South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster warning the public yesterday to prepare for the worst.
This is still a very dangerous storm. We must take it very seriously. The weather man here and others are all predicting that this is a unpredictable storm, a hurricane, and so we must be vigilant. We are in a very deadly and important game of chess with Hurricane Florence.
That's South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster yesterday. Abigail Darlington is in Charleston, South Carolina. And I mean, Abigail, hearing the governor say that this is in a deadly but important game important game of chess. I mean, I think he's getting to what you were saying a little earlier, that there's a lot of anxiousness because you don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, how are people coping with that?
Right, exactly. That's kind of the big thing is that, you know, I think when the governor made the evacuation call earlier this week, the track at that point was showing it going, you know, above us, and, you know, we were out of that cone a little bit. So I think people, you know, at least on Facebook and social media, were sort of questioning if that was premature, and, you know, the lane reversals happened relatively early, and then the track was just moving very slowly, and then it just seems like in the past 12 hours, it's kind of sinking in that, oh, okay, yeah, this is probably pretty serious, and maybe we really should get out, and it's supposed to, you know, make landfall tomorrow. So it is definitely very anxious for those that are still here in Charleston. I know, you know, some people are just looking for anywhere to evacuate, because if you think about it, almost all of South Carolina is sort of in that cone now.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, while people who might have evacuated in the past to, say, Columbia or Greenville or Charlotte, those don't really seem like viable options now. So it's also this question of, okay, well, if I go, where do I go?
Mm.
You know, so it's definitely it feels a little late in the game, but it's also not too late. So, you know, our job today is just going to be helping people understand, you know, let's make sense of this, and here's where it's safe to evacuate, and things of that
right.
nature.
Well, so let me just ask you, I mean, that's such an important question you asked, that people are saying, where do I go if I go? I mean, do you have places to share that you can report on that people could go?
At this point, no. I mean, it's basically a conversation that we all kind of got into the newsroom and started having this morning after we saw the 5 a.m. update. I know, just anecdotally, I know people are looking at Jacksonville, they're, you know, Atlanta, and going south, which is actually a little bit different than what, you know, it seems counterintuitive. If there's a hurricane coming, you don't go south. But
well, Abigail Darlington, I'm going to let you go because I know you've got a lot of work to do to help keep residents of Charleston informed about what's coming. Abigail Darlington from Charleston, South Carolina. She covers the city for the South Carolina Post and Courier. Thank you so much, Abigail, and I definitely hope that you stay safe.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right. Greg Postel with the Weather Channel. Hang on here for just a second. We're going to come back in just a minute. We're talking about Hurricane Florence and the devastation it could bring to the Carolinas, and whether or not big, heavy, wet storms like this are forcing us to rethink what it really means to be prepared and what resiliency really means. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point sponsor Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Hurricane Florence, what it could bring to the Carolinas a little later this week, and whether or not really big storms like this are forcing us, or should be forcing us, to really rethink what it means to be prepared for weather disasters, whether it's on an individual level, but of course, on a bigger level, city, state, national level as well. Here's Virginia Governor Ralph Northam telling residents on Monday that everyone in Virginia needs to prepare.
The largest threat to life from hurricanes is not the high winds. Flooding is the deadliest result of these storms.
That's Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Greg Postel joins us. He's hurricane and storm specialist for the Weather Channel and co-host of the Weather Channel's American Morning Headquarters Weekend. Greg, before the break, we were hearing Abigail, the reporter from South Carolina, saying lots of people are asking, if I go, where do I go? I mean, you're looking at the path of the storm here right now. Do you have suggestions for folks in Charleston, South Carolina?
That's a very personal question.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those ones where you have to consider, is it mandatory? Because if it's mandatory, then you need to leave. And those are presumably associated with the kind of risks that storm surge brings, where inundation levels come to elevations of certain locations. In other words, if you're at a significant risk to see flooding, storm surge flooding, then you need to leave. For the other hazards, the wind hazards, it's, you know, that's more of a voluntary question. Where do you go? Because the hurricane is probably, you know, if you were to listen to the forecast a couple of days ago, you would have thought, well, maybe it's going to move kind of northwestward, through North Carolina and into Virginia. So you might have at that point made a decision to evacuate south, but now it maybe seems like it goes a little bit farther south. And if you had moved to South Carolina, maybe you don't want to be there anymore. So it's really tough. And my recommendation, I guess, would be, it's up to you, and get away from the water. That's the significant threat. The wind threat, you know, if you're well inland, it's probably not a bad option if you have it to hunker down and wait it out.
Let's take a call here from South Carolina. Rebecca is calling from Florence, South Carolina. Rebecca, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. We're as ready as we can be right now. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about, talking about resiliency and how we prepare in light of climate change and water rise and all of those things, the biggest concern that I have is we continue, our municipalities continue to build in places that just don't seem very smart to build on. Barrier islands are overwhelmingly being built with 3- and 4-story houses. We saw it in Matthew where, you know, the older homes got destroyed, and instead of saying, well, maybe we shouldn't rebuild in these places, they built 4-story houses. We spend a lot of time at the coast. We love our South Carolina coast, but I can't help but wonder if we're not being very smart as these types of storms and types of events continue happening.
Yeah.
And I think we have a responsibility to try and make those changes before it becomes a critical mass like what we're facing today.
Yeah, you know, point taken, and we're going to bring in another guest in a minute to talk about exactly that, Rebecca. But let me ask you, I mean, Florence is what, a little, it's inland and north of Charleston here. I mean, what was it like in the last hurricane that you experienced? How long did you really have to sort of deal with power outages, flooding, you know, be prepared to sort of be on your own?
It was about 10 days that we were without power, so that was a challenge. We were fortunate in that we had water and gas was still working, so we were able to cook and clean and do those things. The big problem with Matthew was we got like 15 inches of rain, I think, and then the very heavy winds came down and just completely destroyed the trees in our neighborhood and in most of Florence. And so within our community, you know, we have a lot of those big old oak trees that have not been cared for very well by the municipalities. They're not trimmed properly. The power lines run through them. And in that storm, I mean, they just blew on people's houses all over town.
Yeah.
So it was really the result of those heavy winds coming in after the heavy rains. And I think that's what everyone's afraid of in light of Florence, again, and especially the way that the track has shifted south. Because we are, you know, we're about 80 miles from Myrtle Beach, and we're about 40 miles south of the North Carolina border. So we're kind of in the middle of this triangle where the storm is now moving to. So we're all worried about, you know, those north-north winds coming back in after we get, you know, another 10, 20 inches of rain. I mean, the latest reports are saying we could see feet of rain.
Rebecca, I thank you so much for your call, and I really hope that your preparedness helps you pull through for whatever comes to Florence. But stay safe, and thank you so much for your call. I want to turn now to Stephen Flynn. He's founding director of the Global Resilience Institute at Northeastern University. He's a member of the Homeland Security Science and Technology Advisory Committee and author of The Edge of Disaster, Rebuilding a Resilient Nation. Stephen Flynn, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magda. Good. Delighted to be with you.
So many questions to ask. You know, first of all, we just had that caller, Rebecca, saying in the last hurricane, she was talking about Matthew, that she had to experience that they didn't have power for 10 days. We're hearing now with Florence, officials saying folks need to be prepared to live without power for weeks. Obviously, we learned from Harvey and Irma and Maria, all the way back to Katrina, I could go, that we're dealing with long recovery periods when it comes to these major weather disasters. So when we say preparedness, let's start at the individual level. What do we mean these days?
Well, the individual level, I think we're doing a reasonably good job, you know, getting messaging out, and people seem to be responding like they are now to, you know, the official warnings and mandatory evacuations and so forth. But it's basically, you know, a degree of self-reliance that you could hang out in your house for, you know, 3 days to a week, you know, without having to go shopping, and that, you know, you can live without power basically for that period. So essentially, it's like I can go camping in my home, okay, for those who are not evacuating. And for those who are evacuating, obviously, having a place outside of harm's way where they can hang out and ride out the storm.
May I just jump in here for a second? Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm curious because, like, we live in such an interconnected society, world right now, that I mean, hearing that you've got to hang out in your house for, you know, a couple of days to a week, but the effects of these storms are very, very broad. Like, I'm thinking a lot of grocery stores only have, you know, 24 hours worth of food in them. And if their supply chains get disrupted, you know, like, food could be an issue for many days, possibly even weeks, if you can't actually get food to distribution centers and then to stores.
You're absolutely right. So this is the real issue, is that the systems that we rely on, the infrastructure we allow to take for granted, that we can, you know, have power when we need it, and we can have water when we need it, and very importantly, the supplies that we rely on, those are increasingly complex infrastructure that's more sprawling and interconnected. And so when we have a storm of this size, it disrupts all of that and can be for extended period of time. So it's not just that, as we're saying, that we're seeing more frequent and intense events like the Hurricane Florence. It is that because we're so deeply interconnected and dependent on technologies and systems, that when they get knocked down, it cascades and has a much wider impact. You know, right now, a lot of people were focusing on where the storm may come ashore, but because of the size of the storm and the disruption of power, disruption of water, wastewater systems, roads that get knocked out, on it goes. This is going to have a very much wider impact. And I'm particularly apprehensive for the people away from the coastline who are sort of well rehearsed at dealing with this work, these kinds of events, and the people much more inland. This is what we saw with Harvey. This amount of deluge that we're expecting is going to wash out levees. It's going to wash out dams. It's going to send water downstream where people did not expect that they would be flooded. And many of the most vulnerable parts of our population are often in these low-lying areas. We built in, as your caller said, Rebecca, you know, that we've sometimes developed areas that for a long time people said, don't live there because, you know, it's floods and so forth. We've now put trailer parks and other things.
Yeah.
So I worry we have vulnerable populations that don't even have the means to camp out, and they're in harm's way. And so we really have to get, you know, everybody energized around this challenge.
Well, a listener on Facebook just sent us a message. Catherine Birch sent us a message saying she just saw a lady saying she can't evacuate because she's a single mom with three young children, two dogs, two cats, and no money, overloaded. And Catherine took her some food as of now, but she doesn't know what to do. Greg Postel, I mean, as Stephen Flynn just said, we're talking a lot about storm surge and rain, but give us a little bit more of a view of what you think might happen inland, as Stephen said. He's concerned about vulnerabilities there.
There are very significant vulnerabilities there. I mean, this storm will likely slow down and, as we mentioned earlier, perhaps deliver feet of rain. And that's challenging for the watershed. And if you have, you know, for example, even, you know, a few 10 miles inland or even a little bit more, you'll have this rush of water from the ocean trying to seep its way toward the west and inland. And yet at the same time, the water trying to flow back out to drain the heavy rain, the inland heavy rain, and those two meet up and you can get significant flooding that way. But absolutely, there's going to be significant inland impacts with this, including wind. And the wind, you know, it's not the same kind of wind that you experience along the coast. It turns into a very gusty type of event. But that, with weakened soils, you know, with a very moist soils, trees can come down. Power outages can last for days or weeks or longer. This is the kind of scenario that drives, you know, emergency managers scared, because how do you account for all of the possibilities of the damage to the infrastructure that Florence poses?
Well, let's take a call here. Tatiana is calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. Tatiana, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I lived through Hurricane Irma last year. It was about a Category 2 when it hit us. I lost power for a week, and I remember the house shaking. My husband and I agreed that anything stronger than that, we would leave. So having lived through that experience, I wanted to call attention to Ridgeland, South Carolina. They're located in the mandatory evacuation zone, and officials there have decided to not vacate their or evacuate their local prison. And so I was wondering if your guests could speak to whether or not, is that safe? Is that normal? Are they prepared? Thank you.
Tatiana, thank you so much. Stephen Flynn, do you have a response for her?
Well, that we've probably been pretty well. They understand the exposure and have managed the way. There are prisons that are evacuated in some areas, but you don't need to necessarily evacuate everywhere. There are places that are on higher grounds. I don't know the specifics of this instance, but the real core challenge here is that we should be mapping out these exposures well in advance of these storms. See what's going to happen with the kind of frequency intensity that we have, and we can really boost people's awareness. It's really challenging for most of us to say, well, what's 10 feet of water? I mean, how does that play out in my community? How does it play out in my neighborhood? There are some really powerful tools that we've developed to give people the visuals on that, so you can actually map these things out and say, okay, I could stay put, or I really do need to leave. But the core here is that we're relying on infrastructure and systems that really are going to be exposed for these kinds of events, and they are going to get knocked down for extended period of time. So hopefully what we start doing is get out in front of this. You know, we don't invest very much in what we call mitigation. That is the things we can do to make sure that when we have storms and they hit, they don't knock things out for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And we also don't plan very good for recovery, how to get back up quickly. We focus very much on the life safety issues when these things happen, like the rare and unknowable events, when in fact they're becoming much more frequent and there's a lot that we know about them and a lot we should be
right.
doing about them.
Well, Stephen Flynn, to the point you were just making, I want to play some tape here. This is Federal Emergency Management Agency Administrator Brock Long on yesterday telling CBS's This Morning that people need to be accountable for being prepared for natural disasters.
One of the things I like to remind citizens is that citizens are the true first responder for any small emergency to the large disaster, and we depend on people being prepared, and we don't have a real culture of preparedness in this country that we've got to work on.
So that was Brock Long, the FEMA administrator, yesterday. Stephen Flynn, I mean, Brock Long's pointing to individual responsibility, but you were also saying that we, you know, more broadly speaking, don't have good recovery plans. So, I mean, where should we focus improving those plans? What parts of the plans need to be better?
Sure. I really applaud, you know, what Brock Long is doing in trying to get us to focus more on preparedness. You know, one in five of us can't get out of harm's way because we're too old, we're too infirmed, or we're too impoverished. So we really have to help each other out. And there are social media tools, happily, that are coming to bear that are really going to be helpful. And I'm sure we're going to see them apply again beyond the sort of formal governmental effort. But the core here is that we know systems will be knocked down, and having good plans in place to be able to get them up quickly and where we should go first, and also to help a community get back up on its feet very quickly. Things like getting schools open very quickly afterwards are key often to getting a community back up on its feet. But planning for recovery is something that many communities and many states only do after the event. They suddenly go, oh, geez, we got a mess. We got to figure out how we do this. The core of resilience is that you actually have a chief recovery officer in advance planning for this in advance.
Yeah.
And then making sure that those efforts from private sector and nonprofits and others, everybody's pulling together to get that community back up as quickly as we can,
right.
or state or region in this case.
You know, I didn't mean to interrupt you earlier, but I just, you know, suddenly thought when you talked about how so much of this is done or thought about after the fact, I mean, we can see how disastrous that can be. I mean, look what happened in Puerto Rico, right? So, Greg Postel, I know that we've got to let you go here in a minute or two because you've got busy days ahead of you. But, you know, your last thought for people listening about Hurricane Florence as it gets ever closer.
Follow local officials' advice on evacuation. Stay updated with the forecast and, you know, enact your hurricane plan now. We've sort of known Florence was a risk to the southeastern United States now for many days, and it's coming. And it will be arriving, some of the impacts, as early as tomorrow, and maybe with us for many days yet to come, including all the traditional hazards with a major hurricane, the destructive winds, the significant life-threatening inundation from storm surge, and the flooding, the rain, freshwater flooding that comes with one of these as they slow down inland.
Well, Greg Postel, hurricane and storm specialist for the Weather Channel and co-host of the Weather Channel's American Morning Headquarters Weekend, joining us today from Atlanta. Greg, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Stephen Flynn, let me turn back to you. You've got like a minute and a half here before the break. I'm still curious to hear more about what you're talking about recovery planning, because it seems to me as if in the past several years, recovery planning doesn't just have to deal with the immediate aftermath, but we're talking about much, much longer recovery periods. So it's like meeting a different level of need for millions of people who may be displaced. There's food, water, education, everything. It's a whole different level of planning than perhaps the traditional sort of 72-hour window that perhaps some of us grew up thinking we needed to be ready for.
You're exactly right. And the traditional focus of emergency managers are often the life safety issues that go with an event. And yeah. then the expectation is somehow everybody will get back to business as usual. What we know is that requires a much formalized and more structured planning process that involves the entire community and outsiders who can help. So the key is that we can map out the key infrastructures that we rely on, systems we rely on, and we can develop plans for how to recover, which place do we start first, and build ourselves back up. And also very important, build back better and smarter. Every time we invest afterwards, we should not put Humpty Dumpty together, put them back up on the wall. We got to come back and do it smarter and better. And there's a lot we can do to make that happen.
Well, Stephen Flynn is founding director of the Global Resilience Institute at Northeastern University and author of The Edge of Disaster, Rebuilding a Resilient Nation. We'll hear more from him when we come back. We're talking about Hurricane Florence and as it sort of bears down on the Carolinas, and whether or not we're living in a world now with lots of climate-driven storms that we need to be more prepared than we ever thought. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Planet Money tip number 17. Sometimes the most important things need a hype squad.
Corporate.
Corporate.
Income.
Income.
Tax.
Corporate income tax!
Planet Money, a podcast about the economy. A very enthusiastic podcast about the economy.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Hurricane Florence and whether or not this very big, dangerous storm once again is forcing us to think about what it really means to be prepared for weather disasters and what it's going to take to make so many American communities resilient in this seemingly new normal of lots of climate-driven massive storms. Now, once Hurricane Florence hits land, it is predicted to slow down dramatically. One of the things that's going to make it so dangerous, it could hover over the region in the Carolinas for, who knows, 48 hours. Here's CNN meteorologist Chad Myers yesterday explaining why that could be so catastrophic.
It's already wet. The rain is going to be 25 inches deep, and the wind's still going to be 60. What are all these big, giant southern trees going to do? They're all going to fall down on power lines. So if you need to get out of there, do. If you need power to live, you need to get out of some of these places, even if you're not on the shore, because some people may be without power for weeks.
That's CNN meteorologist Chad Myers yesterday. We've got a listener on Twitter, Audrey Lee, saying, we're in Charleston, South Carolina. We're staying in place pending this evening's National Hurricane Center report. Note that we stayed during Hugo in 89 and are at 25 feet elevation, most worried about downstream flooding from the storm if it meanders around. Let's take a call here. Robert is calling from Freiburg, Maine. You're on the air, Robert.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to lend a first-person perspective on what it's like to go through a category hurricane. I was on the survivor of Hugo, I'm concerned that there's a lot of people there that think that this is just a, you know, whatever storm they can ride out, and it's an absolutely terrifying experience. When the winds built up, and I was living in Georgetown at the time. I graduated from the Citadel. I was going to school at the Citadel there in Charleston. And went up to Georgetown, which was a mistake, and thought we were prepared, and we absolutely were not. But the winds are death
Robert, it looks like your phone's breaking up on us, and I'm so sorry about that. But Robert, they're talking about surviving Hurricane Hugo and how terrifying that was back in 1989. Let's go now to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where Amanda Kinzith. I'm so sorry, Amanda, if I pronounce your name improperly. She's a reporter for WPDE ABC 15 News, and she joins us. Welcome to On Point.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Did I screw up your last name? I'm really sorry if I did.
You know what? I'll answer to anything. It's Kinzith or Kinzeth or really however you want to pronounce
it. Okay. So what I'm going to call you now is our eyes and ears on the ground there in Myrtle Beach. I mean, what are you seeing and how are folks getting prepared?
Well, people obviously are trying to protect their homes. A lot of boards over windows. People are raising things, worried about the floods that are coming. Stores are closed, and the ones that are open, they're out of supplies. And basically, anywhere by the coast is turning into a ghost town. You drive around, and you know, you don't see people. And Myrtle Beach is usually a pretty happening spot. There's usually a lot of people around, a lot of businesses open, but you don't see that here at all anymore. And it's quite different from any other, you know, recent hurricane threats, because businesses would stay open and people would stay. But now, you know, they're fearful and a lot of people have evacuated. They started evacuating on Monday before the governor's call to evacuate. So people have been heading out of town. Of course, some are on the fence, still considering whether or not to leave, and they're watching the forecast, but you never really know what it's going to bring.
Right. So you said so people are perhaps reacting differently, preemptively even this time around versus other hurricanes. Is that something that you're seeing more of with each passing year, Amanda? Like people taking these warnings much more seriously?
People seem to be taking this warning more seriously. Of course, you have the people who have lived here forever, so they experienced, you know, Hugo and Floyd and other hurricanes. But what scares some people is they're saying, well, this is going to be even worse than that. So you have those that are thinking back to, oh, my goodness, I remember what happened during this hurricane. I'm getting the heck out of Dodge because I don't want to be around. Of course, there's always the other people who say, hey, I was here. I survived Hugo. So we're going to hunker down and stay here. Obviously, there's always going to be that. And then you have people who might not be able to afford to head out of town. Of course, there are a lot of shelters that have opened up and they seem to be filling up much more. You know, there's a lot of people in those already, which is a significant increase from previous years.
Yeah. Well, Amanda Kinzith, reporter for WPDE ABC 15 News, joining us from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Amanda, thank you so very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us and putting the eyes over here, because I'm sure everywhere here along the coast is going to need help in recovery once this thing passes, or hopefully just turns out and goes back into the ocean and leaves us all alone.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that one, but I don't think we can be banking on that. Amanda, thank you so very much. Let's go to a caller here. Chesapeake is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling today to kind of raise the issue of industrial agriculture. My father works in North Carolina's Department of Environmental Quality, and was just talking to me yesterday about how he's preparing. He works in the organic management department and kind of dealing with organic waste. And he was saying, you know, they're anticipating hundreds of thousands of chicken mortalities, as well as anticipating how floods are going to affect the large pig farms that are all around North Carolina, where, you know, it's already a problem with those pig farms, with the runoff that comes from them, and with flooding and winds and power loss, that's magnified greatly. And the question, you know, I think for me is really, is industrial agriculture sustainable and as we get more storms like this.
Right, and especially given where some of these, as you're saying, these farms are located. Are you saying that your father's saying that maybe we ought to rethink where the farms are located?
Where, as well, you know, and also what size these farms are operating at. These are huge operations that when they come down in a storm like this, you're seeing massive amounts of kind of loss to
the economics of industrial agriculture, as well as just animal life. Not to mention the environmental quality of the rivers and streams.
From the waste and the runoff. Chesapeake, I'm going to take it back from you there, but thank you so very much. Stephen Flynn, I mean, we were talking about infrastructure a lot in the previous segment, but Chesapeake rightly brings up, I mean, our economy is based on a lot of different things, agriculture being vulnerable too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a great sort of illustration of some of the challenges we face, where the things that we rely on have been scaled, you know, in a big way, like industrial agriculture. And it relies on power, it relies on transportation, it relies on, public health and other systems here to work well. So when we have these events and those things are knocked down for a period of time, you can have a much bigger impact than when it was just an old family farm, right? So in this instance, the core here is that one thing we should be doing is actually understanding our watersheds. To an extraordinary extent, many towns and even states haven't really mapped out what's in a watershed. And so when we have these events, where is that water likely to go and what's likely to be impacted, like a pig farm, for instance? So we discover this, like, who knew afterwards when we could have forecasted this? We have the science, we have the engineering tools, we have the modeling tools. We just have to get ourselves out of a mindset where we'll just cope with it when it happens, and it probably won't. To realize that, one is, we really have to get better at coping with these things. We also have to be better at planning to mitigate them and living with them and adapting to them. I mean, this has got to be a national culture change that we get out of that. Again, these are rare and unknowable events, acts of God, to one that says, no, this is the new normal, and we got to use all the tools at our disposal. We're not going to be able to afford to keep having these tens, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars of catastrophes that we're seeing, catastrophic losses we're seeing, when we could have done so much more. There's a basic rule of thumb, a dollar put in advance for what we call pre-disaster mitigation, prevention, saves you $8 after the event. Well, that's like a no-brainer, but none of us in most places are investing that dollar. And we're willing to open up our wallets afterwards. And then we just put things back the way they were before. So got to get out of this insane situation. We really hope the people down in South Carolina, North Carolina, ride this thing out. But we got to get better at this as a nation.
So, I mean, there is the high cost of the human desire to not plan in advance and not plan for the new normal, as you're talking about. I mean, ignorance is extremely, extremely expensive. But the obvious question, Stephen Flynn, to everything that you just said is, how are we going to change our mindsets even while we're in this new normal of more terrible weather, more frequently, if there's still, for example, you know, there's several people at the highest levels of our government who don't even believe that climate change is real, or is that it's human driven, or that it's, you know, that it's one of the causes of these increasingly powerful, more frequent storms. How's that mindset going to change?
Well, the key, I put it as, we got to improve risk literacy, starting at the very top and moving it all the way down. That's not just understanding hazards. It's how will it play out on things that you value? And doing things like, and I hope folks will do this, the 1 in 5 people who can't get out of harm's way, find them, be a good neighbor, and offer them to provide them shelter, whether inland or somewhere else. But know that that exists, and we have to come together as a civil society. This isn't just a case of where the federal government's supposed to roll in with FEMA and the Coast Guard and others to help us. There's a lot we can do that in self-help and should be doing. Because as Administrator Brock Long said, you know, the first responder is not a policeman often, or a firefighter, or a National Guardsman. It's your neighbor. It's your family member. It's your bystander who helps you out.
So, Stephen Flynn, if I may, I mean, point well taken, but I guess what I was getting at is I heard a call from you a minute or two ago that we nationally have to really think about how we're going to live and build and recover with what you said is a new normal about these extreme weather events. But in order to get to that mindset, we have to believe that the risk is real, right? Seeing that necessarily, that belief of that, or the buying into the fact that we're at increased risk at the, you know, several levels of government with people who have their hands on the purse strings and the decision making power.
You know, it's a heart of recklessness what we're doing right now, which is pretending that this is not real. But the good news, I guess, if there is, I would say maybe it's a tin lining instead of a silver lining, is at the state and local level, at community, most folks are really getting it and they're starting to act on it. And that's where the locus of effort does need to happen. It would be helpful if the national leadership was actually pointing us in the right direction. And in some cases, they are. Again, the FEMA has got a very good new strategy out that's really trying to mobilize us and just get out of this purely reactive mode. But resources have to be applied. And this is Congress that has to be engaged. Obviously, the president has to get behind this. But all of us have have to take this on. It's not just a folks at the top have to take care of us. And we're not children. We're adults, and we have these risks, and we should all – those of us with means and skills and knowledge, we should be working together to try to build this resiliency. And we clearly need to bring the best tools to bear, which we have, to understand the systems that are vulnerable that can make sure that they ride out these storms in ways that aren't hugely expensive and disruptive to our lives.
Let's see if we can sneak one or two more calls in here. Abby is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. You're on the air, Abby.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Well, for now.
Yeah. So I'm just calling because I was talking to some coworkers, and they gave me a response about climate change, that this is just like the Earth's cycles in their climate, or that the Earth is like going through its natural evolution. And I found it hard to like see that as valid when thinking about climate change. Like, where is that argument coming from?
Well, Abby, thank you so much for your call. Stephen Flynn, do you have a quick response to her?
Yeah, absolutely. It almost doesn't matter, all right? Because the core issue isn't that we're having more climate events. We are. But it is that we're reliant on more interdependent connected systems. So what used to be a local shock now cascades in far more destructive ways. So whatever the source is, it's happening and it's real, but it also is our modern foundations are so exposed. And so it's so expensive and disruptive. So this is a nonsensical conversation. We have to invest in the resilience of our communities and the systems we rely on. Because even if not natural events, there are man-made ones too. There are cyber attacks. There's other things that can be done. So this is literally our heads out of the sand and focus on building a much more resilient nation.
Let's take another call here. Ute is on the line calling from Nahant, Massachusetts. You're on the air.
Hi, Magna. My comment would be, I'm from Europe, and in Europe, most power lines are underground, and I'm always kind of amazed that after each storm in America, the power lines still get rebuilt on ground so that with the next storm, they fall down again when the tree hits them and stuff like that. So I was wondering, I think America should invest a little bit in that infrastructure.
Yeah. I'm going to take it back from you. Thank you so much for your call. But Stephen Flynn, once again, that's one of those many examples. It would be very high cost, but it's also perhaps, you know, a doable concrete thing to make cities, towns, you know, wherever, more resilient. Because we're talking about, you know, with Florence, again, I'm hearing already people could be out of power for weeks. But would that be mitigated if those power lines were underground?
Yeah, that would certainly help. But the bigger issue actually is substations that are exposed that are flood, the transmissions lines that come from power plants that are exposed. They're all above ground. That's true in Europe as well. So you have those. They're not going to be like a light switch. It's not going to be like a utility crew just connecting you know, that down wire. Those can take weeks to repair. And that's why these outages are so – will flood substations, will knock down large distribution lines. That's what happens with these large-scale events. And they take weeks, sometimes months to repair or work around. Rounds. But this is core to it. It's yes, many people will be able to ride out the storm, but will they be able to ride out the loss of power for weeks, potentially? Or will they be able to lack of access to water and basic supplies? So we folks will be wrestling with in the millions right now, it looks like, but we could all get out and ahead of this as a community, as a society, if we really just say, you know, we just got to be more resilient.
Okay, Stephen Flynn, stand by for a second. I'm going to get one last call in here. Christy is calling from Plymouth, North Carolina. Christy, I've got 30 seconds, but we've got to wrap up this show. Are you evacuating right now?
Yes, headed to Tennessee.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing good. It was a lot of hectic chaos, and a lot of people are staying behind, and it has me greatly worried with the surge and the river that we're on, the Pamlico, being on the Albemarle. It is really, really scary to think that people are staying behind.
Okay. Well, Christy, you know that everyone listening is pulling for all of you there in the Carolinas. Stay safe, and I hope you're able to get out fully to a safe place. Christy there calling us from Plymouth, North Carolina, trying to get away from Hurricane Florence as it bears ever closer to the coast there. Well, Stephen Flynn, founding director of the Global Resilience Institute at Northeastern University and author of The Edge of Disaster, Rebuilding a Resilient Nation, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Magda.
And listeners, keep those comments coming and tell us what you're experiencing as Florence gets ever nearer. We're at onpointradio.org and also Facebook and Twitter at OnPoint Radio. I'm Magda Chakrabarty. This is On Point.